From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, the Propylaeum brings us inspiring talks by women, Dance Kaleidoscope brings us the Beatles, and Broadway in Indianapolis brings us, well, I'll bet you can guess. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, Brett Wiskons was influenced by Pearl Jam, The Eagles, and Hootie and the Blowfish, but he went his own way when it was time to create original music. Right now, though, one of the most challenging aspects of being a professional artist is locating and procuring the funding needed to bring your visions to fruition. Contributor Pete Brown sat down with Shannon Linker from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and Melanie Klaus from the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation to learn about a new award program whose aim is to provide quick turnaround project funding to mid-career artists in our area.
This year at the Arts Council's annual Start With Art event, we had a very important and fantastic and exciting announcement for a new award program coming out this year. A partnership with the Arts Council and with the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation. We have the two experts in the room with us here. So, Shannon, can I pass the buck to you first to tell us a little bit more about the DeHaan Artist of Distinction Award program that's premiering very soon?
Yes, absolutely. We were really excited to announce it at Start With Art this year because it goes in line with a long list of fellowships that we have for individual artists that we're all very proud of and becoming known for nationally. And this one is a little bit different in that it is time-based. So we are offering a rolling schedule as to a lot of our fellowships are once a year or once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. This will be once a quarter, there will be a deadline. So it's also project-based. That's how projects happen with artists. They come up quickly. They need funding quickly. And that's what this is really about, to give artists up to $10,000. And that there will be five of those available each year. So the exciting thing is that this year, 2017, is a really quick year.
Yeah.
So just this fall, we will have five to give out. And that is really exciting. So next year in 2018, the schedule will start again. And each quarter, we will have a deadline, again, giving out five for the entire year. So this year is special.
Yeah.
Because it's hyper charged with five in a really short period of time.
Well, and it's going to be an awesome case study. I mean, from my brain goes, wow, what a great case study right out of the gate to be able to go, how are artists applying for this? How are artists using these funds? What are they doing in the community with this money? I mean, that's really exciting. And Melanie, how did this partnership come about? I mean, how did this new program come out? Obviously, the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation and the Arts Council have been good buddies for quite a while, but how did this specific program kind of grow?
So the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation and Crystal DeHaan have a long commitment to supporting arts and arts organizations, and predominantly have supported professional performing arts organizations through the support from the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation, and that will continue. This is to enhance and add to our support. And it really came from that desire to broaden and support high quality contemporary visual artists in our community.
Yeah.
And how to do that was a big question because we all work within budgets and we have a philanthropic budget. And so we started by looking at and talking with artists in the community to learn what were their experiences. We talked to other funders, and we worked with the Arts Council and the other funders in our community that do provide support to figure out where could we complement and enhance what is already happening.
Sure.
And so we looked at, you know, of course, we had a lot of great opportunities of where we could support, and but we heard a lot from artists that it was the project grants that were an area, the quick turnaround. But then our foundation is really focused on helping artists aspire and expand and grow, and the artistic excellence that comes from being having high vision for things and taking risks.
Sure. Well, connecting artists with a substantial amount of funding for projects is key. Have both of you found this as a huge area of need in the past and something that you've heard from artists beyond even your research for this program?
Absolutely. I hear it quite a bit, actually. We have the Creative Renewal Arts Fellowship Program that started in 1999, so we have many, many artists that have taken that, and that really is akin to a sabbatical where you take time for yourself to rejuvenate, and maybe travel is involved, research is involved, but projects are not a part of it. So these artists come back, or arts administrators in this case, they come back from these fellowships really rejuvenated and excited, and I've got this project, I really want to do it. I'm so excited about this. So Arts Council, how do I do this?
Yeah.
How do I get the funding to do this?
Yeah.
And there really wasn't a mechanism at that point
mm-hmm.
to help them. You've been renewed, now what?
Yeah.
And so this is an amazing opportunity because it allows us to say, here's the now what. We can help you with the now what.
Right.
And so this isn't just for Creative Renewal Arts Fellows, but it's for anyone working at a high level
right.
in their field and doing, as Melanie said, something that's aspirational.
Well, and if I could add,
yeah, of course.
The foundation believes that it's essential to provide philanthropic resources to foster artistic excellence for artists living and working in Indiana.
Sure.
And the living and working part can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
One part of this initiative is to hopefully provide a platform with a curated exhibit. So those that do receive support and those that make sense to include in the exhibit will be able to showcase their work to the Indianapolis community and provide one more opportunity to allow the Indianapolis community to appreciate the artists that we have living and working amidst us.
Now, there's artists right now listening. There's people who know artists right now listening, and they're fired up about this concept. Let's jump into a little bit of the logistics, because as an artist, I know sometimes I like to glance past the logistics and think about what am I going to do with this great opportunity.
mm-hmm.
So the Arts Council and the Family Foundation are offering workshops coming up very soon. What can artists and people interested in learning more about this opportunity, what are they going to experience at these workshops?
Well, we will walk them through the purpose and the goals of the fellowship, the grant, just to make sure that they're a right fit.
Sure.
This grant isn't for everyone. This is for contemporary artists that are mid-career or established.
Okay.
So it is a smaller niche group of artists. So it would be helpful to come and sit and hear the guidelines and have those explained a little bit. So we'll go through that, all the eligibility points. We'll go through the application. It is an online application to make sure everybody understands exactly what's expected
sure.
on the front end and in the back on the back end with the final reports and, as Melanie said, that exhibition opportunity that's going to exist after the fact.
Sure.
So that will be a time to ask questions, to ask silly questions that you think nobody else is going to be wondering about, but everybody in the room will be thinking about, I'm
right,
sure.
Right.
So that is, it's a good opportunity, and I would suggest every artist that's even thinking about it, even if you think, well, I might not be eligible now, mm-hmm. you might be next year, or you might be in the coming year, so this would be a good time to just learn about it and figure it out.
Yeah, and it looks like the workshop schedule is kind of rolling, so there's several this fall, one in the winter, and then rolling into next year we have spring, summer, and fall workshops again, so they're constantly happening because, as you mentioned, this is something that is an opportunity throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. contributor Pete Brown with the Arts Council Shannon Linker and Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation's Melanie Klaus discussing the new DeHaan Artist of Distinction Award. For more information on this opportunity and others, visit indiearts.org/grants. Indianapolis-based singer-songwriter and past Small Studio Sessions featured musician Brett Wiskons is getting his band back together for a one-night-only show at the Hi-Fi. Melissa Davis talks with Brett about his musical career so far and the reasons behind the reunion.
Can you tell me a little bit about your band, Great Scott?
Yeah, we started at Marion College, now Marion University, back in 2002. And it was four students, and the maintenance man was our drummer. We couldn't find a drummer. Drummers are really hard to find sometimes. Now they're not, but back in the early 2000s, good drummers were hard to find. Or even, like, solid drummers. We found this guy, Aaron, and his nickname was Animal from the Muppets, you know. We found Animal, and he, completed the band, and we just started playing, rehearsing down in one of the dorm rooms, I think in the basement. As a maintenance man, he had keys to all these rooms, so we could just, like, go anywhere and rehearse. It was great. We were able to put some songs together and put a set together, and we started playing gigs pretty quickly, and had just so much fun playing for free, pretty much free pizza and beer. Maybe they'd throw us a little money, but I doubt it. And it was a lot of fun. It just didn't once we got a little older out of college, you know, guys had different priorities, and then it just kind of fizzled a little bit. But we had a good run there, and it's going to be fun to get everybody back together and party like we were 25 again.
And you kept going with the music.
I did, mm-hmm. Yes. But I'm about ready to take a little break myself, so. Mm-hmm. Or at least just be not quite as active. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just kept going, kept pushing, and kept chasing whatever it is, you know. Sometimes you feel like you're chasing your tail, honestly. But I really credit Great Scott in those years to turning me into a halfway decent singer.
When you're playing shows all across the country and you're on those 10-hour drives, mm-hmm. What keeps you going from city to city?
It's probably priorities have shifted a little bit now, but back then, you know, just adrenaline and being young and hungry and having fun with your buddies in a band. But now it's more about putting food on the table for my daughter and my wife. I mean, really. And just being a professional about it and just always having in the back of my mind that this was what I've wanted to do for 20-plus years. That's never left. So in a nutshell, that's basically it now. It's just responsibility.
I mean, it seems
and connecting, with an audience. I should throw that in.
I think sometimes it can just seem like so much fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah,
it's work.
It's work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We could go on for a while on the work aspect of it. I do. I think a lot of people, me included when I was younger, just if I could just be a musician, man, that's got to be the best job in the world, which it is pretty fun and it is pretty great job, but it's work. If you want to, go places and achieve certain things, it's making, 100 phone calls and getting one person to say yes. And it's playing, 1,000 gigs and maybe getting 200 fans out of that. Maybe, I don't know, I don't know the metrics of everything, but it's work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, if you can work hard and you have some talent, you can get somewhere. Unfortunately, I have no talent.
Oh, no, that's not true. You have a lot of talent, and you're very good. And this show, though, will be kind of, more of a celebration, I guess. Yeah.
We are putting work into it. I've worked on the set list in September. I started paring it down and going through my memory and just going through old, we had some live CDs we did, and thinking about what hit well. We're playing mostly, and we're playing some originals, and we're playing a lot of the covers we used to play 10 years ago. But then we're going to add a couple, newer tunes. We've always been a band that we've played together enough. We're going to put some work into these rehearsals, of course, but I'd have no doubt that it'll all come together. Yeah.
your small studio participant and another small studio participant, Oferly, will be opening. Is
yeah.
that correct?
Okay. Yeah, Oferly, our friends up in Fort Wayne, coming down, doing the trio. And then also Matt Record, he'll do an opening set before them. He's a guy actually I grew up with in Plymouth, but he lives here in Indy. And he's got some solid tunes as well. So there'll be, yeah, Matt, and then Oferly, and then the Great Scott reunion shall commence.
Lost my mind in Chicago, along with my pride and soul. I left it all along the shoreline, and I'm hoping you'll make up your mind.
WFYI's Melissa Davis with Brett Wiskons. Great Scott will reunite for one night only, Friday, October 13th, at the newly expanded Hi-Fi in Fountain Square. It's promised to be a night of nostalgia, stiff drinks, and rock and roll. Find out more at HiFiIndy.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Just around the corner, roll up for the mystery tour. But first, Eat Drink Indy's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with executive chef Jeremiah Clark of Zionsville's Cobblestone.
Now, talk a little bit about the history of the Cobblestone Grill. We're sitting on the patio right now. Beautiful space, very much of Zionsville. So it's been around for quite a while.
Yeah, it's been around for 17 years. They've always wanted to be a neighborhood restaurant where, you know, you can come down and you can have a great burger. And you can sit at the beautiful bar, sit in the patio that makes you feel like you're in a different world. It's very quaint.
Talk a little bit about your progression. So you had been in Zionsville before at Plum's Upper Room, right? So talk a little bit about your own personal progression in your career and how it's kind of come full circle back to Zionsville.
Yeah, so kind of after the French Laundry, after Bouchon, coming back, you know, I was at Taste for a little while, worked with Layden Roberts at Meridian, and then kind of did a stint at Eggshell Bistro, and then I came to Zionsville. Moved here and then was the chef at Plum's for a little, just under 2 years. Joined Cunningham Restaurant Group, learned a lot with them, learned how to run a business properly. And so it was a great opportunity with Cunningham Restaurant Group. And then, you know, to come back to Zionsville, I'm super excited to be back in Zionsville. Loved it. You know, I loved when I was at Plum's and just getting to know the guests and really build that relationship. You know, I'm very much, I like touching tables. You know, I like talking with guests, you know, and about their dining experience, and obviously pushing myself to perfect that.
What? Tell me a little bit about what's coming in the future. You mentioned a new menu at Cobblestone. What sorts of things, you know, are just down the road that we can look forward to?
Definitely, you know, we're still going to focus on local, using local farms. You know, Gunthrop Fisher and focusing on that and definitely moving. We're going to move things to be innovative, but still approachable. So we're not going to be doing outlandish things that people haven't ever heard of, but we're going to deliver a product that is, you know, consistent. You know, we're not drastically changing the concept of the restaurant, but we're going to be providing a product that is seasoned properly and is delicious every single time you come. Like with innovation, we're going to be doing things possibly just a different aspect or just look at food a little bit differently. On the menu, you're going to see recognizable ingredients, but then it's going to come to you and you didn't necessarily think it was going to be that way when you see it. So
there'll still be some surprises along the way.
Definitely be some surprises.
Any things you're looking forward to in particular about being back in Zionsville?
The guests and firsthand meeting the guests and talking with them and just interacting with them and having a great relationship with the guests.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat Drink Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2 The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, what restaurateur Martha Hoover and singer Angela Brown have in common. But right now, if you're a theater goer who likes shows from the Big Apple, get ready for a very musical season as Broadway in Indianapolis starts its new year of shows at the Old National Center downtown and Clues Memorial Hall on the Butler University campus. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer checked it out for us.
Five fabulous shows will be gracing the boards of those two Indianapolis theaters, and I invited Broadway in Indianapolis's Matt Porter into the studio to tell us about the season's lineup. It starts in October with Finding Neverland.
Tells the story of J.M. Barrie and how he discovered the character Peter Pan, who we all know and love. And this show is it's a beautiful story. It's based on the Academy Award-winning film. If you did enjoy the film, you'll definitely enjoy this. And it was directed by Diane Paulus, who's an absolutely brilliant visionary in the theater today. So I'm really excited for folks to be able to see her direction.
And I'm guessing the costuming and the settings are going to be spectacular.
Absolutely spectacular. Every show we're going to talk about today is going to be like top-notch big Broadway shows that are all coming. So,
and that's nice to see that. It's always good to have that back in town again.
Yeah, absolutely.
That big Broadway feel.
Yeah, it makes every single thing an event, you know, when it's here. Every single show that comes is an event.
And probably now it gets harder and harder to make a trip to the theater, an event, with all of the competing
options
for people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. But we program specifically for what we think, you know, audiences here expect and what they want. We do very well with family programming, not just kids shows, but, you know, shows that are great for the entire family, like Finding Neverland is great for, you know, preteens and up, going with their family, going with their grandparents, because everybody can relate to this story, this Peter Pan story.
And the same could probably be same for A Christmas Story, the musical.
Right. So, yeah, and everyone sees this for 24 hours every Christmas, right? So it is based...
And the Indiana connection to it,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
too.
I feel like it's coming home, you know. And it's based, of course, on the movie, on the film that we see all the time. He's looking for his Red Ryder BB gun. He hits all the obstacles along the way. He doesn't shoot his eye out, but, of course, he thinks he's going to. But this show was up for 3 Tonys in 2012. It had a season on Broadway, and it did very well. It's a great show. If you love the movie, you love the zingers, the one-liners and all that, it's all there. But it's got a little extra glitz, glamour, and leg kick to it.
Fragile.
Yeah, Fragile is there. So
then this is going to be attract a really interesting mixed crowd, starting the new year with Beautiful, the Carole King musical.
Yeah, and that really speaks to the fact that we're attracting all different kinds of audiences. So Beautiful tells the story of Carole King as a songwriter when she was 17 years old. She went to New York. She wrote so many, you know, great songs that a lot of people don't know that she wrote for other people and other groups. So it really goes through that process and throughout the way she has her own personal struggles with her husband and divorce, which really informed Tapestry, which is probably one of the most influential albums of all time. So it really leads up to that point in her life and that song, Beautiful, you know, when she finally feels beautiful, is just it's a wonderful story. I think a lot of people don't know enough about Carole King. People like me, I'm a little younger, but I thought it was incredible. It reminded me a lot of Jersey Boys. It tells the story behind, you know, the musical icon. And it's a great date night. It's great for, you know, presents for your grandparents and your parents.
And NPR just recently released, they had a panel that selected like the top 100 albums by women from 1964 to 2010. And Tapestry was right up there in the top 10. And
absolutely.
People of all ages have been influenced by that because it was a life-changing album.
Right.
For many people, including Carole King. But
right.
As you also mentioned, she had her hands in so many careers. She helped make a lot of singers famous with her work that never was recognized.
It's surprising,
for.
Too. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think the same thing happened with Jersey Boys, too. When I listened, I was like, oh, they did that. I heard that in a commercial or whatnot. But there, you know, there are a lot of songs that we don't know, you know, that Carole King was behind.
And then, of course, Les Miserables. And the last round of this that I saw was at Beef and Boards here in Indianapolis,
yep.
And they did a fine job of it.
Oh, great.
I think that's the wonderful thing about Les Mis. Most people have seen it, but every production has its own take on it somehow.
Absolutely. So this is the 25th anniversary production, which I want to say 4 or 5 years ago was the same production that came through here. And it's pretty much a fresh coat of paint that the producers wanted to put on the show. There have been innovations in lighting and technology since the show first opened in, I think, 1985. So clearly there were some things that they could change to make it a little more, not really modern, but updated. And one of those things I thought was most interesting is that Victor Hugo was a painter. And so they incorporated a lot of paintings that they were able to find into the scenery of this particular production.
Ooh, so, we'll have to be looking for that.
Yeah, so you'll see some kind of whimsical painting in the background, and it'll be, you know, Paris, you know, during the Revolution. And it was, you know, one of his actual paintings. And I think they use a lot of projection for those. But it is really cool. It's kind of a neat little tidbit about this production.
Well, I think the other thing about that, too, is because it's been around for so long, so many people have seen it. They might have seen it as a child, and now they're an adult, and they want to bring a younger crowd to it, because it is really an all ages type of show, and the music is just
gorgeous. And in our industry, it really was the birth of the mega musical. After that came Phantom and Miss Saigon and all the big, and Lion King and all those big, really big shows. And it is that big show. It still has the big orchestra, the big chorus, and it just, as soon as they start singing in the opening number, it just blows your hair back.
And I can't believe this, but Rent is on its 20th anniversary tour. I saw Rent in Toronto 20 years ago when it was first out.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. And I remember at the time, at the beginning, it wasn't the big success story that it is now.
It got a lot of buzz for being edgy and raucous.
Very edgy. Mm-hmm.
Which is so funny now to think about.
Yes,
but, you know, I think throughout my career, the more times that I start saying 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary, it's been 30 years, I'm starting to feel really old. But Rent was very instrumental for me because it was in my bohemian period of life when it came about. But it is, I just previewed this show a couple of months ago, and this tour is phenomenal. It's just, it took me right back to the very first time I ever saw it.
Well, and it had a very provocative message at that time, too, with HIV and AIDS and everything. And, you know, we're still facing that the HIV epidemic with opioids in a different light. So I think this is also another great educational tool
Absolutely.
For people as well.
Yeah. And I just thought of that today, too, about, you know, the opioid epidemic and the needle exchange programs and things that are available now that weren't then.
It's really fitting, too, that stark, raw production of Rent at the time when it was first put up. A lot of people were – it was revolutionary. You know, they were talking about drugs and gender identities. And all these years later, we're still talking about drug epidemic and problems and gender identity. So it's a very timely production once again of Rent, and for a whole new generation to see and experience. So a lot of good shows, and all of tickets for all those shows are, of course, on sale now at indianapolis.broadway.com.
Fantastic. Well, we have some other things that might tempt people to open their bank account and spend a little money on the arts on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Well, the Headless Horseman rides again at Connor Prairie for 11 straight nights. He's got a well-fed horse this month. And this has been going on for more than 30 years. It's the 34th year of Headless Horseman at Connor Prairie. And by the way, they rename themselves for the month Connor Scary and rebrand themselves as a haunted land inhabited by fun-loving ghouls. New this year, an expanded 300,000 square foot corn maze located in the prairie behind the amphitheater where you've probably heard Symphony on the Prairie concerts. So lots of things for little kids and big kids at Connor Scary this month.
Savor the International Marketplace, the food festival for many days is underway. Started on October 1st, runs through October the 15th. It's a foodie extravaganza, 20 restaurants on the near west side in that international marketplace area. Are going to be offer a lot of different deals to diners. You can find Korean food, Indian food, Pakistani food, Cuban food, Chinese food, whatever you want. It's a great place to learn some new cultures and taste a lot of great food. And you can find out more on their website at SavorTheInternationalMarketplace.com.
The Anderson Symphony Orchestra is beginning its 50th anniversary season in epic fashion with the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto performed by, and we forget, you didn't forget because you had that nice, fun interview with him, but Drew Peterson, APA fellow, is just 23 years old, so still a babe in arms, and he is going to be with the Anderson Symphony to begin their 50th anniversary season. And you can find out more. It's coming up Saturday, October 28th. It's at the Paramount Theater in Anderson, a beautifully restored historic theater, so lots of reasons to go, and find out all the details at andersonsymphony.org.
It's time once again for the Heartland International Film Festival. It runs October 12th through the 22nd. This year, they are celebrating two iconic achievers in the world of film, Alan Ladd Jr. and Rob Reiner. And many of his Rob Reiner's films are going to be featured throughout the run of the festival, including The Princess Bride and Stand By Me. There's also a couple of Indiana-based movies that are going to be shown. The Little Warriors, that's that documentary about the Earth Charter kids that are working to combat climate change. And Year by the Sea has a Carmel graduate who is the producer of that. And Coganada, we heard from him last time, his movie Columbus is actually also going to be part of the Heartland Film Festival, the 12th through the 22nd here in Indianapolis. Find more things to see, do, hear, and be part of at the indiearts.org/guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. Or join us again next week. We'll have that calendar that we like to call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Coming up, you've got an invitation to make a reservation. But first, if we could get in a time travel machine and stroll around Indianapolis in the late 19th century, we'd surely hear about a feisty woman called May Wright Sewell. She believed girls should be as well educated as boys, so she founded a girls' school for the classics, and you'll find her name associated with all kinds of cultural organizations still around today. Places like the Indianapolis Museum of Art, the Indianapolis Woman's Club, the Contemporary Club, and the Propylaeum. Sewell's bold spirit is celebrated in the Propylaeum's annual Marilyn K. Glick Women's Enrichment Series, featuring women who've had brilliant careers and who are willing to share some insights. I invited the Propylaeum's Peg Kennedy and Rose Wernicke to tell me about this year's speakers.
The Propylaeum was founded in 1888 by May Wright Sewell and a group of women that were looking for a place to gather and pursue educational and cultural interests. So they started a stockholders company and built a building on North Street where the World War Memorial is right now.
And that may not sound particularly radical in 2017, but it kind of was at the time, right?
Oh, absolutely. At that time, the women's sphere was in the home, and they were supposed to stay there and behave and be quiet.
That has changed.
Absolutely.
And it seems like such a natural outgrowth of that founding and that mission to have this Women's Enrichment Series, which you piloted last year, and
right.
You're doing it for a second time. Mm-hmm. And how do you decide on your speakers?
Well, we're looking for women who have broken the ceiling, made their mark, stretched the limits. This year we picked Dr. Ora Peskovich, who was a CEO of Riley Hospital and University of Michigan Health Centers. Now she's president of Oakland University. And her daughter, Nyoma Peskovich, who is a broadcast journalist. We paired them together so that we could talk about their developing their careers and their relationships together, mother-daughter, and how that transpired. Then we have Martha Hoover. If people don't know who she is, they know what she does, and that is the restaurants at Patichou, Napoli's, Public Greens. Martha is 28 years in the restaurant business with good food, simple fare, and she now has turned part of her attention to feeding hungry children in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. But she's a restaurateur and an entrepreneur. Then Angela Brown is a Metropolitan Opera singer, started in a church in Indianapolis when she was five, made her way to the Metropolitan Opera stage. It was in London after her visit with us in Indianapolis in April. She'll be going to China. So what we're looking for is women who have made their mark, and we have an intimate venue, about 125 seats, and this allows people to get up close and personal to women who are willing to reveal their stories and successes, and even talk about some of their
challenges.
Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. I not failures, but things they learned from, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you tell the speakers when you engage them? What do you tell them you want them to impart?
We actually talk to them about any one of them would be different things, because Martha Hoover has started a foundation. We want to talk about her restaurant successes and why she did that and how she did it, what's happening with that. Mm-hmm. Angela Brown's got a whole different series because she wants to bring opera to the masses, wants to show how it's edgy and not highbrow, that the stories are for the common man. And the Peskoviches have made their mark in medicine, STEM, mm-hmm. science, technology, education, and engineering and math, I'm sorry. And the daughter in broadcast journalism, and we just want to talk about relationships there and how that's moved forward and helped Naomi see where she's going.
You know, volunteering the way you two are doing is always takes up a lot of time, but there are always rewards, not least of which is you're very close to these women who are speaking in the series. Tell me something you learned from one of last year's speakers.
Our third speaker last year was Judge Sarah Evans Barker, and she had lots of inside stories about what really happens in the court system. And one thing she said that really struck me was that she's never met a bad person, that she said that there's been a lot of these people, they do bad things, but she's never met a bad person, and I thought that was a really interesting perspective. Mm.
We had Eva Kors last year, who's a Holocaust survivor, and in the long run, it took her a long time to get to this position, but it's forgiveness, that if you forgive the perpetrator, you often find that you are relieved because the bitterness that is within you goes away. And she is like 85 and has had a world of experience and shared it with everybody, but the upshot of it is her goal is to get people to talk and forgive.
Peg Kennedy and Rose Wernicke helped create the Propylaeum's Marilyn K. Glick Women's Enrichment Series. You can hear Dr. Ora Peskovitz and her daughter Naomi Peskovitz, Martha Hoover, and Angela Brown. All talks are at the beautiful Propylaeum building at 14th and Delaware. And you can hear the whole series or get tickets for individual talks. Visit thepropylaeum.org to learn how, and that's the PROPYLAEUM.org. For more than 50 years, the music of the Beatles has influenced art, music, and pop culture all around the world. In 2007, Indianapolis professional modern dance company Dance Kaleidoscope created their own production featuring original choreography to the band's tunes, as well as lush Beatles-esque costumes. They've reprised the production for just one weekend, and contributor Ben Schein learned more from DK's marketing director Paul Hansen and dancers Caitlin Negron and Stuart Coleman.
Before we start talking about the upcoming production of Magical Mystery Tour, can you tell us a little bit about Dance Kaleidoscope? Like, what's your approach to dance as a company?
Sure. Dance Kaleidoscope started as an education program years ago. Like, what, 43 years, Caitlin?
I think a little bit more than that, but close. 47. Somewhere in the 40s, yeah, for sure.
And it grew into a professional contemporary dance company with performances throughout the season. Plus, we still have a strong education component. We're out there teaching the kids.
So you do multiple productions a year, and you do stuff out in the community with education and some community-based
stuff.
Yeah,
that's right. Caitlin is actually one of our teachers. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Yeah, so Dance Kaleidoscope does about four regular season shows at the Indiana Repertory Theater, and then we also do outreach programs. I work at Tinley Collegiate, which is an all-girls middle school, And Marielle Greenlee and I have worked on a program for a few years there just to introduce them to dance and the discipline, and there's always a performance with it. We also have a program called Every Day We Write a Dance that goes to elementary schools that also introduces the just general ways to think and learn how to dance. And then we have some other things that we do, like the Spirit and Place Festival and a Turning Points program with storytelling paired with dance.
Well, that's really awesome. But we're here today to talk about the Magical Mystery Tour. Indianapolis audiences have had a chance to see this production before, but how did this piece come about and why the Beatles?
Well, David Hochoy really loves the Beatles music, and he had always wanted to do something to it. Caitlin was in the – I'm sorry, I keep throwing it to you, Caitlin.
It's but okay.
You were in the original production, so you were around for the birth of this piece. What was that like?
It's always really special when you get to be in the studio when something is created. I think Stuart can also talk to that. So I actually was only in the second half of it. We did it my very first season, and the company had started working on – the first act of the show called Innocence when they were in residence in Ashland, Oregon at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And I think that the first act really captures that feeling of being out in a beautiful, sunny, special place. And it has that really like sort of joyful, like happy-go-lucky feeling to it. And so I was actually, I feel really lucky to come into it with that base of it. It just was great. You know, the costuming is new, the movement was new, it had this fresh feel to it, and it's great to be able to come back to it.
Stuart, what's it like to be a part of a continuum of dancers dancing the same parts over, you know, now going on its fifth production?
It's really exciting. It's one of my favorite things that I get to do in Dance Kaleidoscope is kind of fill the shoes of the dancers that have come before me and kind of assume the roles that either they created or that they've danced before. And not only do it the way that David always saw the role being performed, but also put my own personal spin on it and, you know, make it mine for that one time that I get to perform it. You know, I get to perform a really awesome trio at the beginning of this show to the song Here Comes the Sun, and it's, in my opinion, one of the best parts of the entire show. I'm really excited that I get my chance to sink my teeth into it and perform it with the other two company members that I'm doing it with.
Well, speaking of Here Comes the Sun, how familiar were you with these songs before you started the production? Were you a Beatles fan before?
Well, I thought that I was a Beatles fan, but I gotta tell you, David really picked some songs that I did not really know. You know, I was looking for Hey Jude, and I was looking for Help, but, you know, David found some songs that I had not previously either heard of or knew very well, and have since become a big fan of. The first song that we started rehearsing with was a song called Get Back, and I had never heard it before until we started rehearsing, and now, you know, I can't get that beat out of my head.
Well, I mean, for the Beatles, real quick, just to talk to the dancers, how do you get into character for the Beatles? Like, what's your balance between your own interpretation and what David wants for you through all of this?
I think that each song just sort of drives you into the right place. So David has a really unique gift in that he's able to match the way that he creates movement so well with the music, and so it just, if you're there, you're there, and like you're with the music no matter what. So I really feel like it's kind of a tip of the hat to David, as his choreography just pairs so well with the movement that if you learn the movement, you repeat the movement, you investigate it physically, that you'll discover it artistically. And then there is like a very like, there's a central character in the piece that we follow, this one man, like through this journey of innocence to decadence through the piece. And so there is sort of a loose, I wouldn't say story, but feeling of like a traveling across time, like throughout your life through the piece.
You know, the 60s were a time of cultural upheaval and clashing ideologies, not dissimilar from our own current reality. So how is this piece, The Magical Mystery Tour, and doing a big Beatles production relevant today, do you guys think?
One of the things that I love most about this piece is David talks about this man's journey through life, and he's looking for something. David refers to him as a seeker. And when we get to the finale of the piece, to the song Let It Be, the central character reaches his arms forward, and he's still searching for what David calls the meaning of life, and he still hasn't found it. You know, he's gone through this journey of innocence in Act 1 and all of these decadent experiences in Act 2, and at the very end, he's been looking the entire time for the meaning of life, and he still can't find it. And I think that that notion is really beautiful and very much still applicable to our society as it is today.
Well, that's really awesome. This sounds like a really great production. And what else does Dance Kaleidoscope have coming on this season?
We have a great Christmas show that's going to be at IRT for 2 weeks. It opens November 30th and runs through the 10th. The first act is going to be very traditional, all white costumes, classical music. And then Act 2 is sort of like a smorgasbord of a lot of different countries. It's a world Christmas, so it's just a little bit of everything. And I also want to say the audience experience for Magical Mystery Tour is a really cool one, because not only is it great music, and you're going to recognize some of them, and some, like Stuart was saying, you're going to hear some songs that maybe you didn't know about, but David does take the audience on this journey. And so it's like looking at a painting, you know. You sort of get these feelings, and you go on a personal journey while you're sitting there. It's the coolest thing.
That does sound amazing. So, as a big rock and roll nerd, I have one question for you all before we go. True or false, in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. True or false, Paul?
True.
Stuart?
Absolutely true.
Caitlin?
Right on.
Thanks. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. Looking forward to seeing the show.
Contributor Ben Schein with Dance Kaleidoscope's marketing director Paul Hansen and dancers Caitlin Negron and Stuart Coleman. DK's production of Magical Mystery Tour runs from October 19th through the 22nd at the Indiana Repertory Theater, and you can find out more at dancekal.org. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm here with John Knott of Knott Brothers. They have a new EP out titled Misadventures. John, give folks like a quick description of what the Knott Brothers are all about.
Yeah, Knott Brothers is a weird band that is kind of hard to put a genre on, but I guess we'd be pop. We're everything from electric guitar to funky beat machines. Oh, and every once in a while I play melodica.
Been running circles through my brain, and I've been drinking through the pain, and I've been wondering how we got here.
And you have five songs to share with us, John, that you said these songs were like instrumental in your musical development, right? Not necessarily favorite songs, but just influenced you in some way, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What's your first song?
Number One by an Indianapolis-based band who's now more Chicago. Margo and the Nuclear So-and-Sos, Broad Ripple is Burning, is a song that I still play anytime I do a cover set. And it meant a lot to me in my music listening when it came out.
Children, Broad Ripple is burning, and the girls are getting sick off huffing glue up in the bathroom while your boyfriends pick up chicks. And darling, I'm lost. I heard you whispering that night in Fountain Square. The trash-filled streets made me wish we were headed home. And there was love.
Next one, song by Fall Out Boy, the whole Take This to Your Grave album. Really resonated with me as like an angsty teenager. But number one song on that one that I still listen to is Homesick at Space Camp. The one that's like, there's a light on in Chicago. I think that's it.
Landing on a runway in Chicago, and I'm drowning all my dreams I've ever really seen in California. Cause you know what's in between is something sensual. It's just not convention in the hallways. Tonight the headphones will deliver you words that I can't say. Tonight the headphones will deliver you.
Number three, this is the weird one. This is the weird one, Banana Pancakes by Jack Johnson. Because when I learned it on guitar, it was like the hardest thing I'd ever done.
Well, can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. We could pretend it all the time. Can't you see that?
Number four, Bonafide Lovin' by Chromeo, the duo that made us feel okay to be the weird duo that we are.
Let me tell you that I saw your boyfriend walking down the street. He was standing all shaky, hands all sweaty, and he could hardly speak. I might as well take a minute or two to put you onto some game. You got a boy like him, a man like me, and that's just not the same. And never mind an SMS, what you need is a sweet caress. Everybody wanna talk too much, but what you need is a special touch. Ooh, girl, wouldn't that feel right? A little dinner with a candlelight. And really, when it comes down to it, pick a man that's down to fight. I'll give him bona fide loving.
Fifth and final song.
Fifth and final song. Kanye West, Monster. Because still to this day, I think that's the best Nicki Minaj verse. And Bon Iver is on it. And that's wild to me.
To sacrifice your life.
Chum a monster, no good blood sucker. Fat, fat, fat. Now look who's in trouble. As you run through my jungle, all you hear is rumble. Kanye West samples, here's one for example.
Gossip, 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 just stop it. Everybody know
I'm a monster.
I'ma need to see up to your pants at the concert. I'ma need to see up to your pants at the concert.
And John, you guys have some shows coming up. Do you want to let folks know where they can catch Knot Brothers live?
Sure. Our two big ones this month are coming up with Sweet Poison Victim and DJ Kyle Long at Pioneer Friday the 13th, and then we've got another one right before Halloween, October 28th at Square Cat Vinyl for their big party.
And let folks know the best way to keep up with Knot Brothers online.
Definitely hit us with a like on Facebook so we can get you event invites and all that. facebook.com/knotbros.
And it's Knot Brothers with a K, K-N-O-T Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Pete Brown, Melissa Davis, Jill Dittmeyer, and Ben Schein. You can hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, the Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts, the Spirit and Place Festival, and of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.